Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy this morning is Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board member. And Kristen, welcome back.
Thank you.
When we last checked in with you last week, you were in the process of moving. I mean, you know, the Tribune was kicked out of Trib Tower.
Yes.
Down to kind of generic office space at the Prudential Building. How did that transition go? How are you?
How am I coping?
Coming along with the new digs?
You know, I was surprisingly a little emotional leaving Tribune Tower, but our new space is beautiful and updated, modern. Prudential has been very welcoming. There's a big electronic mural when you walk in that says, "Welcome to our newest tenant, the Chicago Tribune." We have a new boardroom, so it's nice.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
All right, very
no
good.
Complaints.
We missed you at the golf outing, the radio station golf outing. Normally, the Chicago Tribune has a foursome. That's not true.
No,
but it would be nice, you know. I mean,
I could serve
a little
drinks,
something
but
for
I don't
the
golf. How did it go?
It was fine.
Yeah,
it was good. Yeah,
is it like a competition? Did you win?
It's what we call a scramble in the business golf outings. And actually, in the afternoon, there's a morning shotgun and afternoon shotgun. And in the afternoon, my team did win.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I play with Dez Clark, Chicago
I don't know
Bears.
Who that is. Okay.
What?
I know. I'm sorry.
Chicago Bears, longtime tight end for the Chicago Bears.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I bet he played better than you did.
No.
Really?
He crushes the ball because he's a huge man when he connects. But, you know, he's only gotten the six out a couple times this year. He's a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but he just doesn't play that much. Super nice guy, though. Very fun. Some great Jay Cutler stories.
Really? Ooh, share some.
Well,
you just sprinkle them in during the show.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. We have important business to get to because while I was gallivanting on a golf course with a fellow world-class athlete and Dez Clark.
Fellow, right.
It was nice to be with, you know, kind of somebody at my echelon in terms of...
I don't know. I think your golf game's pretty uneven.
Yeah,
I
would say uneven.
Way of putting it?
I would say uneven is generous. Mm-hmm. I was speaking really more of my Dungeons & Dragons game when comparing world-class status.
Sure.
We was on the golf course, and of course the Inspector General's report, the much-anticipated Inspector General's report, came out yesterday, and the question, should Trump fire the FBI? Not the director, not the senior leadership, the entire agency. It's not like the agency was conceived by our founding fathers. Should he? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Not a particularly glowing report of Jim Comey's FBI by the DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz, to say the least. 500-page report, the upshot of which, sort of a disgraceful culture, a culture where those in senior leadership positions felt that the laws didn't apply to them and that they could prosecute their political grievances through the nation's top law enforcement agency.
Right. I just broadly speaking, I don't know that there has been a bigger triumph for Donald Trump in his presidency than this report, because for all of these months when he is tweeting about DOJ and Comey and the media is just slaughtering him for marring the reputation of these fine institutions.
Right. Threatening our democracy.
Threatening
by
our democracy.
Undermining law enforcement.
I mean, like, he would tweet one or two things, 24-48-hour news cycle, panels on CNN, and lo and behold, he's been right. And these institutions are not above scrutiny. And he does, for all the crazy things that Donald Trump does, he does have sort of a gut check. And I think his gut was right on all of this, and it was revealed in this report. And that's the only hopeful thing, is that there is still apparently an independent IG to watchdog some of these very powerful federal agencies.
Well, and it's interesting to kind of take a perusal of the coverage from across the spectrum and across outlets. And what you get from the left is the headline, no finding of political bias. That's the spin they're trying to offer in the wake of this devastating report. Here's an example of this. Chris Klizza, the insufferable political reporter, gossip columnist at the Washington Post.
Everything that Giuliani is talking about, and I watched a little bit of that, everything that Giuliani is talking about, it is hung on seven words from Peter Strzok in response to Lisa Page. Donald Trump makes a lot of this. They were in an extramarital relationship. That is a fact that exists. I'm not sure how it pertains to this, but she texts him and says, and this is unprofessional, she texts him and says, Donald Trump isn't going to win, is he? I'm paraphrasing. And he responds, no, no, we'll take care of it. Now, that's not how any of us want the FBI to work. At the same time,
we'll stop it. Right.
There's nothing that was found in the IG report, 500 plus pages, that suggests those seven words that Strzok typed out biased the investigation.
I mean, it's tortured spin. You get to it. Of course, we've talked about Strzok and Page at some length over the many months this has been ongoing. But the whole kind of no finding of bias, not exactly. That's not exactly what the IG's report actually says. For example, on the issue of Strzok's text messages from the report, these text messages caused us to assess Strzok's decision in October of 2016 to prioritize the Russia investigation over following up on the mid-year-related investigative lead discovered on the Wiener laptop. We concluded that we did not have confidence that this decision by Strzok was free from bias. We concluded we did not have confidence that the decision by Strzok was free from bias. That's not the same thing as what is intended by the position DOJ finds no bias. That's not exactly what the DOJ Inspector General is saying.
No, and I think Kimberly Strassel of the Wall Street Journal, in some of her tweets, sums this up really well. She says, don't believe anyone who claims Horowitz didn't find bias. He very carefully says he found no documentary evidence that bias produced specific decisions. It means he didn't catch anyone doing anything so dumb as writing down that they took a specific step to aid a candidate. That's all they're saying.
We didn't have somebody saying, I am doing this because I want Donald Trump to lose and Hillary Clinton to win, just so everybody knows.
Yes, I'm going to twist this investigation in favor of Hillary Clinton because she's my candidate and I want her to win. No, they didn't find anyone specifically saying that. But I think the fabric, the pattern that he lays out in 500 pages surely shows that there was bias.
There's so much here. Obama lied to us about what he knew about the Hillary Clinton emails, which we sort of knew during the campaign, but this provides some added confirmation and context. Jim Comey getting trolled by Hillary Clinton. My emails?
Mm-hmm.
Hillary tweeted,
right.
Because Comey was using a Gmail account for FBI business.
Not equivalent, though. Not equivalent.
Correct.
She's using several private servers and then using BleachBit to erase her emails before producing them, which her lawyers combed through in 2014. Not exactly the same thing.
Erase it. How do you mean, like with a cloth? Bob and Waukegan, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, there's no bias. I'm not a white, middle-aged old guy. So what they should do is they should give a secret ballot to all of the agents in the FBI, asking them who they would trust to be their leaders. Don't give a ballot to anybody who's already in a position of leadership because they've all lied to us. So the rank and file are the guys that get their hands dirty every day. They should also ask the question is, who would like to come before Congress in the Senate to testify about what went on in the Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump hearings. And then they wouldn't have to give anybody immunity in the upper echelon to get the answers they need, because all the guys that are honest would come forth and just tell them straight out.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Jordan in Forest Park.
Hey, Dan. Good morning. Hey, Kristen, one of the, I thought, more interesting parts of this report was the special favors that were provided to FBI agents by the news media. And in some cases, it was dozens of media people that were involved in this. And I wondered if you'd ever heard of anything like that before in your experience.
Thanks, Jordan.
I mean, so I've been sort of astounded at some of the defense of this type of behavior, as if you have to do this sort of unethical behavior in order to get information. I mean, I can just speak to my experience. I've been a reporter now for 20-something years. We sign a letter. We sign an agreement every year at the Tribune that I'm not allowed to take dinner from somebody else. I'm not allowed to sign a petition. I can't put up a yard sign. If I have outside sources of income above a certain amount, I have to report that. I have to report if I have, dividends or stocks or anything that would influence my reporting. To think that this is somehow just the way business is done, and if you're at the higher echelons of covering the, national security, you have to, this is what you have to do. You maybe you have to sleep with a source. That's the defense of the New York Times reporter. It's absurd to me, and it really undercuts what people like me are out trying to do every day, which is not engage in anything that could offer anyone to criticize me for a conflict of interest.
Right, and there are strict rules regarding gift giving to executive branch officials, and this is what Jordan is referring to in the IG's report. There were gifts in question, including tickets to sporting events, golf outings, drinks and meals, admittance to non-public social events. The inspector general reports that they will separately report on those investigations as they are concluded, consistent with the applicable law that's in the report. So there's the kind of smoke there, but we don't know how much fire there is at this point. Ed in Oak Brook.
I expected this, and I'm not really disappointed. I'm just ashamed of this country. But the point I want to make is that I understand the liberal media, and you played some pieces, denying this practically with their verbiage. But what I don't understand is your regular rank-and-file person out in America that has any education at all, not seeing for what this is really all about, how these people just manipulated everything to try and get Hillary to win. And it's the bottom line is they were more afraid of Hillary winning and ruining their careers than actually doing what they were supposed to do. And if you study things in the past, like the 911 thing, I'm starting to get around to that, you'll find that the FBI was dropping the ball all over that investigation as well, or that prior to that. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Ed. Well, the Kimberly Strassel, going back to her and her op-ed in the Journal, says you can sum up this 568-page report, two words, insubordination and bias. I think there is a third word, and it's competence. That's what Ed just said, and we'll get to that.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Joe Walsh here. The Republicans are forcing a vote on amnesty next week. Call your Republican congressman and say no amnesty. We'll talk about it when freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy this morning, Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune editorial board. And reactions pouring in to the inspector general's report that was released yesterday, the DOJ inspector general, that was highly critical of Jim Comey for his insubordination, generally speaking, of the FBI for judgment calls and just kind of general deviation from stated protocols within the agency. Here's what Trey Gowdy had to say. Now, Trey Gowdy, of course, a former prosecutor, inclined to be very protective of the FBI. Just last week, we heard Trey Gowdy sort of rallying to the FBI's defense with respect to having that informant, a.k.a. spy, in the Trump campaign in 2016. Here's what Gowdy had to say about what this report means for the FBI.
Just what a dark day it is for the FBI and the DOJ, two institutions our country desperately needs. We desperately have to be able to have confidence in them. And this level of bias and animus, not only did he want to stop the Trump campaign, he wanted to stop the Trump presidency. This
You're
is an FBI.
Peter Strzok,
the FBI agent who was on Hillary Clinton's investigation and arguably the lead Russia investigator, not only wanted to stop his campaign, but once he won, got on the Mueller probe because he wanted to impeach him. That is a level of animus and bias that everyone should reject. And Chris Wray, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Chris, there are consequences. The consequences are that your fellow citizens question whether or not they can have confidence in the world's premier law enforcement agency. And that's coming from somebody who's defended him a lot throughout his career. This was a bitterly disappointing report.
And just to be clear, Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, has taken the dramatic step of ordering political bias training.
Oh, come. Are you serious?
For FBI employees.
But not fire. But Peter Strzok is still, am I pronouncing that right?
He's
still, Strzok is still employed.
Mm. Training, though, they're going to close all the FBI field offices for a day and have the field agents watch a series of videos featuring sermons from the rapper Common.
Okay.
And then they'll
then
all
for it.
Then they'll take a look at their bathroom policy.
Right.
After that.
Yes.
So that's the response. But Trey Gowdy, that's a pretty stinging indictment from an erstwhile defender of the FBI. And it's just chapter and verse of insubordination and bias and also incompetence, which we'll get to. Bruno in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, I honestly believe that some organizations cannot be reformed, that you reach a point where, you know, the rot is so deep that you have to tear the whole house down and rebuild it because the timbers are bad. I think that's the way we are with the FBI. I think it needs to be dismantled. It's been corrupt since the days of J. Edgar Hoover. It's always been political. They have a history of railroading people. They do abuse their power, and it's been going on for a very long time. That report was a whitewash, really.
Thanks for the call, Bruno. Appreciate it. Now, that is not the opinion of one Jim Comey, who's has a starring role in this report. In the New York Times, Jim Comey has an op-ed. The report says I was wrong, but that's good for the FBI.
Yeah, this is some spin. Wow.
Everything's coming up roses here. He parrots the left's party line on no finding of bias, which is not what the report says. No evidence of bias or improper motivation affected the investigation, which I know was done completely honestly and independently, writes Comey. Second, the report is vital in shedding light for future leaders on the nature and quality of our investigation and the decisions we made. Oh, this, he'll just have a good old time distilling this report for his students at, where is he teaching, William & Mary?
I don't know. I was thinking, I hope he made some coin on his book because I don't think he has much of a future.
A Higher Loyalty? Yes.
Oh, is that the name of the book?
That's the name of his book, yeah. And then he gives you the same version of events that he's given in those countless interviews he did during that insufferable book tour. But here's his sort of concluding remarks. You know, he's so happy that there is this inspector general to backstop him because Jim Comey is nothing if not a humble guy. And, you know, he has to make difficult calls, and I don't know if they're going to end up being right or not. And in hindsight, I could see other people's perspective. I really want to get this right, though. I'm really earnest about it. And that's why it's so great to have this report and this inspector general doing a review of my insubordination. As FBI director, I wanted a second set of eyes on the agonizing decisions we made. Agonizing. During the 2016 election, knowing full well the Inspector General's office could draw different conclusions, I was also confident that even if it disagreed with our decisions, it would find the FBI team made them without regard for political favor or partisanship. The Inspector General's office has now reached that very conclusion Its detailed report should serve to both protect and build the reservoir of trust and credibility necessary for DOJ and the FBI to remain strong and independent and continue their good work for our country.
Do you, I mean, all, wow. All of this just conflicts with that July 5th, 2016 press conference. Do you remember that?
Sure.
I mean, I remember.
When he exonerated Hillary.
Yes. So at that time, you know, he was, just as a reminder, stepping outside what is the norm and making a recommendation. So his report was going to go to DOJ, and then DOJ would decide whether to prosecute. In that press conference, he said, he talked about all the violations of classified information, but also concluded that there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, but our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. So he exonerated her in July and stepped way outside the boundaries of what is the norm for the FBI. And yet we are still supposed to think that he wasn't doing that to protect her campaign.
The Inspector General's report on that matter. We found that it was extraordinary and insubordinate for Comey to conceal his intentions from his superiors, the Attorney General, the Deputy AG, for the admitted purpose of preventing them from telling him not to make the statement and to instruct his subordinates at the FBI to do the same. So the other thing that this report confirms, importantly, Trump had a basis to fire Jim Comey. Rod Rosenstein had a basis for the letter that he wrote explaining the termination of Jim Comey. And Jim Comey continues to kind of try and lie and spin and rewrite history. Just in terms of this overarching narrative you're going to hear all day from the D.C. press corps of no political bias. That's what the report found, Jim Comey declares in his op-ed. That is not true. Again, from Kim Strassel at Wall Street Journal, the report very specifically says in the summary that the that bias was found everywhere, that, quote, the biases, the decisions that were made, the basis of them, cast a cloud, quote unquote, on the entire investigation's credibility. Talking about the Hillary Clinton email investigation.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about the other individuals who I don't think they're named in the report, but also in combing through their emails, found all kinds of references to I'm with her, and that there wasn't any substance to the interview. And then Peter Strzok, am I saying that again?
Strzok.
I'll get it by the end of the show.
Yeah, your pronunciation is more Dickensian.
Okay. That he was trying to get a job for his kid on the Hillary
campaign.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
I mean, these are just disqualifying things. He was texting someone in the campaign during this investigation, reminding them that he had this great 25-year-old kid who was ready to go work for Hillary. So this idea, like you're saying, that there was no bias, it was everywhere.
And the question is, why did he do what he did at that press conference? Why did he exonerate Hillary? And the play was that some of the conventional wisdom was to protect Hillary's campaign because they wanted Hillary to win, right? What if it was to protect Obama? This is the issue that Andy McCarthy at National Review has raised from the beginning. And remember what President Obama said about when he learned of Hillary Clinton using, illegally, a private email server to conduct the public's business. He said it was after a New York Times story.
Let me just say that Hillary Clinton is and has been an outstanding public servant. She was a great Secretary of State for me. The policy of my administration is to encourage transparency. And that's why my emails, the BlackBerry that I carry around, all those records are available and archived. And I'm glad that Hillary is instructed that those emails that had to do with official business need to be disclosed.
Well, you say that you have the most transparent administration ever. You said it again just a couple of weeks ago.
It's true.
How does this square with that?
Well, I think that the fact that she's going to be putting them forward will allow us to make sure that people have the information they need.
Yeah, 3 years later, now we have the information we need from this report. FBI analysts and prosecutor two, this is from the IG report, told us that former President Barack Obama was one of the 13 individuals with whom Clinton had direct contact using her ClintonEmail.com account. Obama, like other high government officials, used a pseudonym for his username on his official government email account. This was reported and discussed during the campaign, but this provides the substantiation, an independent substantiation to it. Also, the report says Obama, he lied about how, you know, his knowledge of her private email and email server. The report also says that Comey knew Obama had lied. He knew it. And so the question that should perhaps be raised is maybe it wasn't him rooting for Hillary Clinton or trying to essentially put his finger on the scale for the Clinton campaign. It was to protect his boss, the president, President Obama, Mr. Higher Loyalty.
I don't know. I think he was sitting on, I think he went into this whole investigation over the email scandal with recognizing that, or at least buying into the theory that there was no illegal intent. And even in that July 5th press conference, he admits that what they found was that that Clinton used several different servers, and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department used numerous mobile devices to view and send email on a personal domain. And then as older servers were taken out of service, they were decommissioned in various ways. I mean, this is to take all of this that he said on July 5th, and then he leads to this conclusion where, you know, she didn't do anything wrong and he wouldn't recommend that she be prosecuted. It reminds me of, do you remember 1998 when George Ryan was under federal investigation and facing Glenn Pichard?
Yeah.
I'm going on a little tangent here. But Scott Lazar, the then U.S. attorney, held a press conference to basically exonerate George Ryan and to say he was not a target of the investigation. He didn't. Pichard was putting out ads linking George Ryan to the Willis family's death. And it was a very unusual insertion of the U.S. attorney basically saying, yes, we're investigating, but George Ryan is not a target. And then look what ended up happening.
Well, maybe it's not mutually exclusive. Maybe it's to his actions were to benefit both President Obama and Hillary Clinton, because here's something else that's unusual and confirmed by the IG's report. We've talked about this, too. The reference to Obama is removed. A paragraph in Comey's statement summarizing the factors that led to the FBI to assess that it was possible that hostile actors accessed Clinton's server was added, and at one point referenced Clinton's use of her private email for an exchange with then-President Obama while in the territory of a foreign adversary. The reference to the exchange with Obama was later changed to another senior government official and then ultimately omitted. So why would you do that? Because it shows that Obama knew what she was doing, and it shows that Obama lied to the American public about it.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The Department of Justice Inspector General's report confirms what we've been witnessing from Jim Comey for the better part of the last 2 years, which is that he is a conniving coward.
It's not what he said in his op-ed that he wrote to the New York Times.
No, but what's clear from this report, in many of its 568 pages, is that Jim Comey had a higher loyalty, to borrow a book title, to the political class than he did to the rule of law. And frankly, those rank-and-file field agents in his agency, the agency he directed, the FBI. Interestingly, on just the matter of email, since this largely centers around the Hillary Clinton email investigation, remember how, you know, Jim Comey, who, David Harsanyi references in the Federalist, a good piece he has in the Federalist today about the report, Jim Comey's capricious idealism. It's that's a good way to describe Jim Comey. Whatever he's doing, even if it's in conflict with something he was doing or saying 5 seconds ago, it is appealing to something transcendental.
Right. He's
such a preening sop.
That's kind of the tone of his op-ed in the – is it in today's
New York Times? Yeah.
Yeah, where he basically says this is all – he disagrees with some of the specific findings, but this is a good, healthy discussion for the FBI to be having. And then he continues to defend himself and just say, you know, he wasn't sure he was right about the things he was doing at the time, like the 2016 press conference.
But he does know his heart is pure.
But his heart is pure. It's a tough job. It was difficult to make those decisions. He encouraged intensive review when he was at the FBI director, and he continues to support its work even after I was fired.
Jim Comey's heart is always pure. That's the one thing you get from Jim Comey. His actions, though, don't match that purity of motivation. Remember, he made a big show of this during the Hillary Clinton email investigation about her using a private email account. That was improper. You know, the press conference in question, you know, he provided chapter and verse and all the things that she did that were improper and wrong before saying she's not going to be prosecuted. But one of them was using a personal email. Hey, you know, that's out of bounds. I've gotten some emails from employees about this, Comey said at the time. If I did what Hillary Clinton did, I'd be in trouble. My response was, you bet your ass you'd be in trouble. This is one example of a speech he gave in October of 2016. If you had used a personal email, Gmail, or if you had the capabilities to set up your own email domain, if you used an unclassified personal email system to do business in the course of doing our business, even though you were communicating with people with clearances and doing work, you discussed classified matters in those communications, you would be in huge trouble in the FBI. Huge trouble. The Department of Justice Inspector General's report finds Jim Comey used a personal Gmail account to conduct FBI business on numerous occasions when he was director of the Bureau.
Mm-hmm. But that's fine. Doesn't apply to him. The rules don't apply to him that he would have lambasted his own employees and said so had they used an unsecured
Lambasted. They'd be in trouble. They'd be fired or facing criminal prosecution.
Yeah.
And this is a whole nother conversation about the guys like Comey and McCabe, who are just as much a part of the political ruling class as any member of Congress, and whether they are untouchable. They can do things that your mid-level staffer cannot do without getting prosecuted. Frankly, this is the same conversation we had about Hillary Clinton. A former U.S. senator, presidential candidate, can do things that a decorated general can't do mm-hmm. without being prosecuted. So it's about political clout. It's not about the rule of law, I suppose. Also, this, at the time, in July of 2016, the FBI told the press there was no evidence that a foreign power had hacked Hillary's server. The IG report, foreign actors obtained access to some of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails, including at least one email classified as secret. Mm-hmm. How about the five staffers, FBI agents, referred for... that are referred in this report for further investigation. Strzok and Page, of course. But then you also have agents 1 through 5 as they're identified. There's messages back and forth. And this is, again, against the backdrop of everyone of the left claiming the headline should be DOJ Inspector General's report finds no evidence of bias in Hillary Clinton investigation. Well, then you read what's actually the banter between some of these agents, including but not limited to the lovebirds, Strzok and Page. For example, August 2016, Agent 1 and Agent 5 discussing their jobs. I find anyone who enjoys this job an absolute blanking idiot. If you don't think so, ask the one more question. Who are you voting for? I guarantee it will be Donald Trump. I forgot about Trump. That's so sad and pathetic if they want to vote for him, Agent 5 responded. Someone who can't answer a question, someone who can't be professional for even a second.
Mm-hmm.
No evidence of bias there. I would rather have brunch with Trump and a bunch of his supporters like the ones from Ohio that are retarded. than spending time with his fellow agents.
No bias there.
No. No. They're retarded, the Trump supporters. There's more here, too. More misses between Agent 1 and Agent 5. November 8, 2016, Election Day. You should know that I'm with her.
Yeah, now these were instant messages between two agents who were dating at the time and are now married. So that might explain the casual nature. You know, they're in a relationship and exchanging information about the campaign.
Yes.
But he was part, Agent One was part of the group of agents who interviewed Hillary Clinton about the email during the email scandal. And he texts his then girlfriend at the time repeatedly about how they don't have anything on her. We shouldn't even be interviewing her.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing. I'm being forced to do something to which I'm adamantly opposed. So they clearly had conclusions before they even interviewed the principal, Hillary Clinton herself.
The most meaningless thing I've ever done with people acting like this is effing 9/11. I don't care about it. I think it's a continued waste of resources and time and focus. It's just so obvious how pointless this exercise is.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you think that interview went down? I mean, when these are the conclusions being drawn before you even enter the room, do you think that they seriously questioned her to the extent that they would have if the situation were reversed and it were a member of the Trump team or Trump himself? Of course not. And that same agent, when he was deposed as part of the IG report that was just released, he said, oh, this was just a personal conversation. I was just venting. I'm embarrassed about it. But, you know, this is just banter on instant messaging. No, it's very revealing of the intent of these agents surrounding the whole investigation, which is really important.
Yeah, that's right. And it's some of the reactions to the report, you know, are borderline comical, of course, because Comey used a personal email just like Hillary. She trolls him on Twitter, like, because both of them did it, it somehow becomes okay. I don't know. They apparently are not fifth grade graduates. And then Jennifer Palmieri, her comm director, it basically says, you know, this IG report says Hillary would have won if not for Comey pulling Wiener's laptop.
Oh,
his laptop.
Stop it. I know what you did there.
11 days before the election. Listen to Palmieri.
It did confirm what I've always believed about Jim Comey, which was that he wasn't operating out of a political bias, but he did have a very dangerous, corrupting belief that because he wasn't motivated by partisanship, that he could use his own judgment to decide what actions were right to take. And that led him to act well beyond his role as the FBI director. And he did so with devastating consequences. And there is a real hubris there to think just because you are not a political person that you can go above and beyond what your role is supposed to be. And, you know, I think his original sin was the press conference that he had where he was Hillary Clinton's investigator and judge, jury, all at once. And, you know, as he once famously said, it's right there in our name, investigations. That's what we're supposed to do. To act publicly as he did is not his role. And I think, you know, we're like living every day. We live with the consequences of that.
The consequences, of course, she's saying Trump's victory. Should they blame Comey? The interesting thing is, you know, the left has a real problem. They can't figure out when and where to embrace Comey. You know, during his book tour, book tour, they're celebrating him because Comey is part of attacking Donald Trump, and his holdovers are still there doing their business that they started under Comey. So they embrace him there, but then he's responsible for Hillary Clinton winning the election. You could make a case; it's very difficult to pinpoint, but it's not implausible that his decision to reopen the case with the Wiener laptop 11 days before the election was impactful, if not determinative. The difference is people like me, conservatives like me, we wanted Jim Comey gone on day one regardless because we saw this guy for the conniving political actor that he is, for the self-righteous simp that he is. The left, all they are, you know, is kind of shifting sands. You know, my opinion of Comey moves from day to day depending on my immediate interests. And so it's fun to watch like a Jennifer Palmieri try and twist herself in knots, criticizing Jim Comey on the one hand, but, you know,
pretty grateful to him on July 5th, 2016,
yeah,
when
right.
he exonerated her. I think, too, this underlying premise that Hillary voters were really motivated by this last-minute Anthony Weiner reopening of the investigation, that was enough to pull votes off of Hillary Clinton in favor of Trump? No. I think it's further proof that there is still this tone deafness and of not understanding Trump voters, not seeing this coming. Nate Silver at 538 actually did a piece on whether or not the Comey letter impacted
right.
the election. And he basically says, I mean, it's sort of indeterminative, but that she woke up on October 28th before the letter was released, or before he announced that he was reopening the investigation. And she was only up by 6 percentage points and really struggling in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So it's not like this was so damaging, even looking at the poll numbers. She wasn't really ahead that much at that
right.
moment.
And, I mean, one of the things Comey did not do is prevent her from campaigning in Wisconsin and Michigan.
Sure.
That's not on him. But a question here, though, too. This report, this damning report on the FBI and to some extent Department of Justice. So does this now give Trump clearance to shut down Mueller?
No.
Because how can you trust what's happening now under the oversight of this Department of Justice, even with a Sessions recusal, Rod Rosenstein's a holdover? How can you trust it with all Christopher Wray and the Trump appointee? I get that. But with the agents and the culture, which is really described in detail in this IG report, the culture at FBI, how can you trust FBI and DOJ, a DOJ who has oversight responsibilities on Mueller? Does this give Trump clearance to shut down the special counsel investigation? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line, you say no.
No. I mean, I think it gives him more credibility. And from 18 months ago till now, when he has been tweeting about and raising doubts about this investigation and
yeah.
conflicts and leaks, and this is a triumph for him. But does this mean that he can now turn around and commit political suicide by firing Mueller? No.
You still think, even in light of this report, it's
yes.
political suicide?
I mean, Mueller is still... So James Comey at one point... we were all talking about how he was respected and independent. And so it does make me nervous because Mueller came in with that same reputation, both political parties supporting him. But no, I don't think under any circumstances Trump should fire Mueller.
I actually think he should not do that either. I think this gives him a lot more standing to do it. It vindicates him with the Comey firing in a significant way. But I think that this is all going your way. Your opponents are flailing. Don't interrupt.
Right. And whatever the Mueller investigation turns up, he has a greater case to cast doubt upon whatever the results are, but not letting him go.
Kevin in Northfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I think both you guys are being a little weak on the IG investigation. No one is making the main point, and the main point is this: if either of you two were in charge of the NBA or the baseball or the football, you never in a million years would allow all the refs who liked the Southern teams or all the refs who liked the National League. You wouldn't do that, and yet all the refs that are judging Hillary and judging Trump seem to be Hillary partisans. And we don't even hear their names. And the Justice Department and the FBI are not even handing over the emails. There were new emails in this report that we knew nothing about. Why did we know nothing about them? Because they weren't handed over. What are they, security issues? No, they're not. It's a deep state covering up. And I cannot believe that our institutions, which are supposed to be objective, justice is supposed to be blind. That lady, she's blind. She's not viewing one side or the other side. It's absolutely unbelievable is what I say.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Yeah, Lady Justice under the last regime may still have the blindfold on, but they put a little I'm with her lapel sticker on her. Another name that was mentioned, and again, this is on the Department of Justice side. This is in Kim Strassel's column in the Journal. Former Assistant Attorney General Peter Kadzik was tipping off the Clinton campaign even as he took part in the investigation. The report, the IG report, finding Kadzik to have failed to strictly adhere to his recusal from the investigation, the same thing they found with Andy McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI.
Was this the person who tipped off about the Podesta emails, or am I conflating here?
I think that's right.
So, I mean, that was another just, he was tipping off Podesta and the Hillary campaign about the drop that was about to come regarding the Podesta hack.
And then you had that another senior official at DOJ, Bruce Ohr, whose wife was, doing consulting work on the Trump dossier.
Right.
I mean, but you know, lest you, so there's, you know, dozens and dozens of people at high levels in the Department of Justice and FBI that are running cover for Hillary Clinton and seeking to undermine Donald Trump, or at minimum hoping to see Trump undermine. But there's nothing to see here. There's no bias. There's nothing wrong with the agencies.
Just a couple of bad apples.
Yeah.
Just that one text.
Yeah.
There was just that one text of, we're going to stop him. No, there's actually a lot more.
I mean, this is these agencies were being run like the DNC, or like an appendage of the DNC. That's a problem. And I think it calls into question the ongoing legitimacy, certainly of the FBI. Marty in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good show, guys. Listen, this is a waste of time. But nothing is going to happen to the Clintons, and nothing is going to happen to Obama. Absolutely nothing. With this pure heart routine, this is the typical left. You know, I said I was sorry. I'm apologetic. Nothing is going to happen. This is a waste of time. And this, I hate to use the cliche, but this is why Donald Trump won the election.
Yeah. Thanks. Sorry, Marty. I didn't mean to cut you off, but thanks for the call. Megan in Evanston.
Hey, guys. Good show. My point is, you know, people say that Washington is tone deaf to the conservative voice. Great. I don't want them to understand me. They are never going to understand me. That's why they won, because they're isolated in their bubble. Let's forget about having them understand me. Don't care. I understand. We understand. End of story. Thanks.
Thanks, Megan. Jeff in Franklin Park.
Yeah, you already mentioned about the Comey obstruction of justice. But, you know, one person nobody's talking about is Flynn. Flynn should, you know, repeal his plea,
mm-hmm.
and get that report unredacted and get all those agents to testify under oath. I mean, there's clear bias that put him in jail, or not in jail, but got him in trouble. You know, he needs to get those people under oath and testify in his case.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jeff. I think there's a lot of rumors about whether or not Flynn is going to withdraw his plea. And it's not so much that he doesn't believe that he can beat the Mueller charges against him, the lying to the FBI charge. It's that they are using his son as leverage against him, and he's trying to prevent his son from being prosecuted and going through what he's going through. That's my understanding. Candace in DuPage.
Oh, I agree with the last two callers for sure. But Kristen and Dan, I totally disagree with you. I think that he should fire them. And I think he should do it on prime time, and I think he should explain his actions, and I think he should encourage people to actually read the report, not listen to what Christopher Wray, and I think you should call Christopher Wray what he is, a hack, okay? I think that he should fight like hell and get rid of them, and I think the American public will, you know, of course, the regular people on ABC, CBS, NBC are going to have their meltdown. I think he should do it on a Monday, like Dan Bongino said. Don't do it on a Friday and try to hide it. Do it on a Monday. And let it be a discussion for a whole week. But I think it'll die down a lot quicker than people think. And I also think President Trump should remind people what happened when the Clintons came in and they fired over 90% of the AGs across the country. And yeah. Nobody said a thing.
U.S. attorneys, yeah. Thanks for the call, Candace. I got an idea. He could do it like in a boardroom setting. He could be at the head of the table, and then Mueller and his underlings could be around the table. And then he could say something like, you're fired.
No, I still agree with your initial point that he's in a good position here. And the lack of credibility that this report is bringing about will help him no matter what happens down the road. And I just think it will borderline on obstruction if he fires Mueller. And he'll lose people who think the way you do.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy this morning is Krista McQuarrie. She of the Chicago Tribune Ed Board. Amy's Peyton, Amy J's Peyton, is being released from his CPS reeducation center today.
I got to hit the button.
Yeah.
Sorry. Such an amateur. Is it the last day of school for CPS?
Graduation.
Graduation
for the young man.
For like 8th grade, maybe?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I graduated from 8th grade.
I did too. You know, it was not
I don't
a
know why we're making such a big deal.
I know.
About it.
I was going to say, my neighborhood, everybody has graduation parties. Like we really, so I gotta like write $50 checks to everyone for graduating.
Isn't
from
that sort
grade?
Of like you know, low expectations? Like you're celebrating
yeah.
that? Like you say to your kid, yeah, now you know it's starting to get serious when you graduate high school. Also, not having a graduation
right.
party, I'll tell you when you do something
yes.
worth celebrating.
Very sure I did not have even a high school graduation party.
That's a prop parenting tip. That's a freebie I threw in on a Friday. speaking of re-education, Christopher Wray, the FBI director. Has ordered political bias training for FBI agents, despite the fact that the left is trying to claim that the IG's report says there was no evidence of political bias.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, so that is interesting, isn't it? And what I'm thinking here is maybe we can do a combo. Maybe the FBI field agents can just go over to Netflix and they can throw in some sexual harassment, Me Too training as well. Have you
this
seen the new?
Great.
Have you
this
seen the new
great.
Netflix policies?
You stared at me for more than 5 seconds.
I was a sort of a glance.
You.
It was
I,
a glance.
I counted. That was 7 seconds.
I try to apply when I'm looking at somebody, gazing at somebody.
Again, 7 seconds.
I applied the same rule I apply to my dog Hayek, which is so if I stare at him too long, he starts to growl at me. So if a woman starts to growl at me, then I stop looking.
Okay.
So, you know, if it becomes uncomfortable.
And how many seconds does it
usually take? Well, it doesn't take five.
Okay.
It's usually much quicker. The Netflix, new harassment, anti-harassment, obviously, policy at Netflix that, you know, one can only hope will sweep businesses big and small across the fruited plains. For example, as Kristen was alluding to, you... cannot look at anyone in the Netflix workspace for longer than 5 seconds. It's considered creepy.
Right. Yeah. So if you're on a set or you're surrounded by coworkers, there's a 5 second rule of making eye contact and then you have to avert your gaze.
You mustn't ask for someone's number unless they have given permission for it to be distributed. You mustn't ask for somebody's phone number unless they've given permission for it to be distributed. Well, how do you know if you have permission if you don't ask?
Right. And then if they say no, you're not allowed to ask again. So
you get one ask.
You get one ask and then you can't communicate.
What if
anymore?
The person changes their mind but is a little bit reticent?
Nope.
So other rules at Netflix and perhaps a workplace near you include don't give lingering hugs or touch anyone for a lengthy period of time. All right.
That's a good general rule.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Even outside of Netflix, that's a good rule.
Yes, it is.
Don't ask out a colleague more than once if they've said no. So you can't ask a colleague out more than once. You can't ask for a phone number, whether it's for romantic purposes or generally.
Right. I just need to text you about tomorrow's schedule. Nope.
I have not given you my permission.
That's correct.
Steer clear of a colleague once they've said they're not interested in you. Yeah, okay. Don't flirt. Well, who's the arbiter of that? Are they going to have like a flirting czar at Netflix? How do you arbitrate these things? Also, the rules encourage employees to shout, "Stop! Don't do that again!"
If you're feeling harassed, stop! Don't do that again. It's actually in quotes. That is the specific phrase that they would like their
shouted in the workplace.
So, ask me for my phone number.
I'm not.
Stop.
I'm falling into
Don't
that
do
trap.
Don't do that again. Oh, see, you just stared at me again. 7 seconds. You're breaking the rule.
People are going to want to be replaced by robots. Now, Netflix responding to the people ridiculing their policies. We're proud of the anti-harassment training we offer to our productions. We want every Netflix production to be safe and to be a safe and respectful working environment, including the Obamas. We believe the resources we offer empower people on our sets to speak up and shouldn't be trivialized. That's another rule. You're not allowed to trivialize their rules.
I love, there's one article that compares this to, you know, second grade dating where you'd pass a note and say, do you like Jane? Circle yes or no. And in this case,
you can't pass that note more than once.
Right. If Steve says, Jane, would you like to go to a movie? And Jane says, no, thanks. Now Steve can never talk to Jane again.
I mean, this has been happening on college campuses for some time. It's not surprising this would be at these philosophically socialist, PC-addled tech companies. But is this happening in your workspace? Is this happening down at the local Iron Workers Union? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 646-36-DA, the smelting facility you work at. Are you going through the Don't Flirt Netflix training?
Sexual harassment training.
Uh-huh. What about the Tribune?
I have never had to go through training, but like I was saying earlier, we do have this kind of contract we have to sign every year about, you know, behavior and what's accepted and ethics and, you know, I just had to pay you for my McDonald's breakfast because I don't want anybody thinking that you just bought me breakfast.
Yeah, oh heavens.
So, but no sexual harassment training yet. I'm sure it's coming, though.
So it's not a rule. It's just sort of an unwritten rule that no one is allowed to look directly at John Cass. You have to avert your eyes in his presence.
That is correct. Yes. Huh. Well, and he's such a gentleman. None of this would apply to him.
Well, I have, obviously.
He always talks to me and looks past my left ear. He never makes eye contact.
Just looks straight up at the ceiling.
Yes.
That's what everybody's going to have to do now.
Just blindfold everybody. You know, just be in a workspace.
No, because
with
then there's going to be touching that you run into people accidentally. You have to just stay in place and address people by looking straight up at the ceiling.
There's nothing strange about
that. No eye contact. And when you address people, too, you have to make sure that it's not flirting. So you have to have just endless
monotone
conversations about the weather.
Yes.
Or, you know, your favorite baseball team.
Right.
I mean, it's like a Lego movie, basically.
Yes, it is.
Frank and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan, I don't know if you, comparing the two speeches, you got Chris Ray and you got Mr. Schultz from Starbucks.
Yeah.
They use the same script.
Yeah, a common.
We've got a couple bad apples, and because of that, now we're going to make it all better because everybody's going to get trained. Nobody really did anything, so why are we going to spend $2 million to train them for something that nobody did anything wrong?
Yeah, it's confusing. These are confusing times, Frank. Thanks for the call. Zach in Downers Grove.
Yeah, I really think these rules are one-sided. I think the person that has the number needs to give permission to the person to ask for the number.
The person who has the number has to give permission.
So you just have to sense that someone might want your number and then offer it.
Yeah, but if you sense that someone might want your number and you're wrong, doesn't that constitute improper flirting?
Yes, it does.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just don't talk, then, is what you're saying. Don't talk
pretty
and
much.
Don't look at anybody.
Just sign language and blindfolds.
Thanks for the call, Zach. Yeah. All right.
And at Starbucks, it was unconscious bias training.
Yeah.
Right?
Which we know is pablum. Scientific poppycock, including the founders of this implicit bias test. They concede the point that the results are not replicable, thus it has no scientific value.
Yeah, I just like the phrasing, you know, sort of like when Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin decoupled. They didn't want to use the D word, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So it's unconscious bias training. What is Netflix? Are they calling it sexual harassment training?
Yeah, anti-harassment rules.
Anti-harassment rules, okay.
When they decoupled, when Gwyneth Paltrow and D-bag from Maroon, wait, not Maroon 5,
Chris
Coldplay.
Martin from Coldplay,
yeah,
I like
same.
Him.
Aren't they the same band?
No.
Did they split the apple?
Oh, that's so mean.
Mike on the north side.
Good morning. I just wanted to say this political correct nonsense
is getting a little out of hand. Even yesterday at the Admiral Theater, if you went to see Stormy Daniels, they wouldn't let you in unless you brought your lawyer and a satchel of cash.
Okay.
I can't sing anymore. Can you believe she made me sign a confidentiality agreement?
That's just.
But this
so
is just to take. This is just to take your eye off the big picture. All they're stealing. Look at the shiny thing here. Look at, we're building a tunnel. Forget about all this other stuff.
Yeah, are you excited about the tunnel?
No, not at all. I would have liked if somebody from the Tribune or the Scum Times would have held Emanuel's feet to the fire and say, hey, how about these kids that are being sexually assaulted? What are you going to do about that? And don't try crying the crocodile tears. We already fell for that with Daly.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, we'll get to that. I mean, you got on this, on that story in particular, you have to give the Tribune a lot of credit. Loath as we are to do such things, but we'll talk about it.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
I'm looking at you. You wore green so you could hide. I don't blame you. You're a tramp. Oh, that was a good one. Oh, that was right where you wanted it. Oh, Mrs. Crane, you're a little monkey woman, you know that? You're a little monkey woman. You're lean and you're mean and you're not too far between either, I bet, are you, huh? Would you like to wrap your spikes around my head?
Carl Spackler could not work at Netflix.
No.
That's the kind of thing that's a good example. It could be part of the training video of what you're not allowed to do, even from a distance.
Right, at Netflix, which... Also, I think you can, can't you like watch naughty movies on Netflix? Suddenly they're so, you know, holier than thou, but I'm pretty sure you can still
watch
porn.
That's sort of the funny thing about the left, right? I mean, they're, you know, totally on board for Caligula, excuse me, Caligula, but that when it comes to, you know, asking for somebody's number in an office setting, there you have people jumping out of the window. Fun text from a friend of mine who works at a big law firm, part of their, you know, anti-harassment training, whatnot. You can imagine what a law firm is like, probably not dissimilar from Netflix. One of the more memorable lines from the training he had to go through. When the young associate smiles at you, it's because you're a partner. You're old and gross. She doesn't like you. It's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and let's get in for Amy this morning. I should mention is Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune editorial board member. Kristen, let's get right to it. We've got our friend Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, Monday to Friday, 5 p.m. Chicago time. Also the author of the new book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Before we get to the IG report, I just obviously wanted to ask about Charles Krauthammer after he released that poignant letter a week ago and, you know, what your conversations with him have been like, a reaction to the letter that he released.
Yeah, I mean, it took my breath away. I knew probably 10 days maybe before that. And just the cancer that they thought they got came back in a aggressive form, and as only Charles could do, he eloquently is leaving this life.
Yeah.
So I kind of encouraged them to put out something to let viewers and readers know ahead of time so that that he could see how much influence he's had in the world and in the U.S. and the love for him, and I think that has happened, and I've seen a lot of op-eds and letters and all kinds of outpouring, so I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, no question. The letter was so elegant, as, of course, Krauthammer is, but I love the line that, you know, basically, I lived the life I wanted to live. I'm going to miss it, but I lived
true.
The life I wanted to live.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I don't know if you've seen that special that I did with Charles about his life and around the book that he had, Things That Matter. you can watch it online. Where it's you know, you just see a guy who's done everything he could possibly do in amazing circumstances as a quadriplegic after that accident in medical school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. I mean, so he had. I didn't realize this until I read more about him, but it was a diving accident while he was in med school, and he was in the hospital for 14 months, but came back, finished, went on to become a psychiatrist, and then, of course, had his writing, author, Pulitzer Prize-winning career after that.
Yeah. I mean, it was his freshman year, his first year of medical school, Harvard Medical School. Dove into a pool that wasn't filled all the way, broke his neck, and then finished with that class at the top of the class.
Wow.
At Harvard Medical School.
Well, switching gears to this Inspector General report, I want to get your take on this. Kim Strassel, who's, of course, on Fox routinely, she summed up this 568-page report in two words, insubordination and bias. I think you could add a few more words, uninterested, improper gifts, intimidated by Hillary's lawyers. But insubordination and bias seem to be the top lines. What was your take?
Well, I think what happened yesterday is that the initial, you know, spin of it was that at 30,000 feet, they didn't find documented bias in actions by the FBI, but listed a number of things, especially Jim Comey's actions, that were a problem. As you looked at it longer, and as you really got into the 568 pages, there's a lot of things in there that are really damning. The Strzok texts with Lisa Page, the another two FBI agents who are talking about the resistance of fighting, you know, President Trump. The fact that Hillary Clinton's emails definitively were captured by foreign agents of some kind. The fact that she was emailing President Obama while in a foreign hostile territory using her BlackBerry, and the fact that Obama was receiving these emails from an email server that was private and then said to 60 Minutes that he didn't know about it until the press knew about it. You know, I mean, there were so many little nuggets that if you just delve in there are pretty damning.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point. Is that the media, especially the left media, keeps focusing on just the one Strzok text saying, you know, we're not going to allow him to become president. We'll stop this. But there's the entire quilt here of all of these instances just reveal that there was in fact bias. So that I think argument can be thrown out the door. What do you think about some calls like from Rudy Giuliani and others that this gives the president leverage to actually fire Mueller?
Yeah, I think that's a dangerous road to go down. And once he does, it opens up another, you know, Pandora's box of actions up on Capitol Hill. I think that they're obviously going to use this. And I think if you look into the IG report, there's also a tease of what's to come. You know, I mean, this is the Hillary Clinton email investigation. There's another IG report that's coming of the beginning part of the Trump investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and there are indications in here that he's kind of laying the groundwork for what's to come. And so I know it's frustrating to people who watch these things, the investigations of the investigations, that it never seems to end and no one seems to be held accountable. But I do think that this is kind of a blueprint for down the road.
Yeah, that never, no one ever seems to be held accountable is the real rub, I think. And it's, and Jim Comey here, we have another instance with the lecturing about Hillary Clinton improperly using a private email and saying, boy, anybody who does that in FBI, they'd be in big trouble. And they know it as long as I'm the sheriff in this town. And then, of course, we find out he was using his Gmail account to conduct FBI business. I mean, it's so and it's very much like the McCabe thing. McCabe can illegally leak and no arguably illegally leak and no prosecution, perhaps. This Senate intel staffer illegally leaks classified info. He's getting prosecuted. Hillary Clinton doesn't get prosecuted. A three-star general does get prosecuted. Sort of the capriciousness of law enforcement.
and Washington. I mean, this is why people hate Washington, for one of many reasons. The other thing is the nugget in here that these FBI folks in their dealings with the press were getting kind of kickbacks for helping, you know, leak. Wow, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, we've been really
Wizards tickets or something.
Yeah, we're really missing out. We've had people ask that. I work for the Chicago Tribune, and I mean, we have to sign a contract every year that's very specific about no dinners. You have to disclose any outside sources of income. That just doesn't really happen, I feel like, in credible news organizations. So I was surprised that there's even some defense of that among the media that, well, this is what you have to do to get the scoop in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I must have missed out.
Speaking of scoops, real quickly before we let you go, you had this great interview with Trump on Air Force One about his summit with Kim Jong-un this week. And, you know, so give us a little flavor of what it's like to be on Air Force One for, you know, the common folk out here in the hustings.
So obviously covering the White House in the Bush administration, I've been on Air Force One many times, but this was, it came out of the blue. We were kind of seeing if something would happen, materialize. They said, can you get to Air Force One? We worked the logistics and we made it happen, which was not easy, but it's really interesting to see you see always the shot of him going up the stairs, but just to see it from the inside, of him walking up the stairs and kind of walking in and then down the hallway to a conference room where we did the interview. And what was really surprising, and I guess, and I talked about it at the beginning, was he was on 26 hours
right.
of being up, and, you know, he's 72 as of yesterday. The energy of this president, no matter what you feel about him, he is nonstop.
He is Brett Baer. He's the Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. weekdays in Chicago, and the book, 3 Days in Moscow, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of the Soviet Empire. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too. And he joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Kristen McCreary in for Amy, and no bigger defender on the Hill, at least on the Republican side of the aisle, of the FBI than one Trey Gowdy. And here's what outgoing Congressman Gowdy had to say about the FBI report into all of the D.C. press corps spin we were discussing just a moment ago with Brett Baer.
Just what a dark day it is for the FBI and the DOJ, two institutions our country desperately needs. We desperately have to be able to have confidence in them. And this level of bias and animus, not only did he want to stop the Trump campaign, he wanted to stop the Trump presidency. This
You're
is an
about
FBI.
Peter Strzok,
the FBI agent who was on Hillary Clinton's investigation and arguably the lead Russia investigator, not only wanted to stop his campaign, but once he won, got on the Mueller probe because he wanted to impeach him. That is a level of animus and bias that everyone should reject. And Chris Wray, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Chris, there are consequences. The consequences are that your fellow citizens question whether or not they can have confidence in the world's premier law enforcement agency. And that's coming from somebody who's defended him a lot throughout his career. This was a bitterly disappointing report.
So the question is, what should Trump do about it? Christopher Wray, the current FBI director, Trump appointee, is going to send agents to political bias training. That doesn't seem like enough. And so he could. There's two options. I mean, he can, you know, tweet about it and celebrate some level of vindication from this report with respect to how he was treated and has been treated by Comey and Comey's FBI. Or he could come before the public, maybe a national address, talk about the importance of the FBI and the Department of Justice and offer concrete steps that he personally is going to take or is going to make sure are taken to restore the credibility of the FBI and the Department of Justice that has been lost through this saga of the end of the Obama administration into his administration.
Somehow I don't think that's going to be Trump's response. I think we're going to see a lot of Twitter traffic. But I do think that this has been just a huge triumph for him, perhaps bigger than passing tax reform or the North Korean summit. He has been tweeting and talking about this for about roughly a year, maybe longer. And with every tweet where he took a shot at DOJ or took a shot at James Comey, the hysteria of the media has been aimed at him, that he is dismantling one of our fine institutions, that he is democracy is threatened because he was raising questions about all of these issues, leaks, bias, unequal treatment. He's been right.
Yes.
So I think he's in a good position, and I would not, he should not fire James Comey or
fire Mueller. You mean.
I'm sorry, fire Mueller. He should just enjoy this position that he's in right now. And then whatever the Mueller investigation does reveal, this gives him a lot more leverage to question the results of that.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about just his personal vindication on the topic, because he's not president of the United States, so he can just say, I told you so. I was right. Yay for me.
That's what he will do.
It's supposed to be improving the conditions, draining the swamp, making life better for Americans, pursuing smart public policy. And the difference between conservatives and the left is we respect law enforcement as a matter of course. We want law enforcement agencies to be places of integrity across the board. We're not like Adam Schiff, who only likes the FBI when they're investigating my political opponent. There's a big difference. And so it seems to me, as a law and order guy, that Trump has presented himself to be as a candidate and as president, think about immigration policy, border security, for example. This seems to me a great opportunity to be a builder, to be a constructive influence inside the Beltway that he said he was going to be that difference maker, that disruptor inside the Beltway that he said he was going to be, rather than just doing what the punditocracy will do, kind of go back and forth and spinning and say, yeah, Trump is right, and spike the football. Spiking the football doesn't get you very far.
What do you want him to do? What do you want him to do to improve the – do you want him to fire Ray? Do you want him to institute policies, push Congress hold FBI to a higher standard? What do you want?
I think there needs to be personnel changes and policy changes. And I think, you know, a big meeting with Ray where they talk about the senior leadership and the culture and the FBI, and, you know, they agree to some concrete steps that involve personnel changes and policy changes to drive culture change. And the same thing at DOJ with Sessions and Rosenstein. I think it's important for him to take a personal interest in the future credibility of these institutions.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy continues now. And make sure to stay tuned to catch me, Mike Gallagher, coming up at 9, only on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan. And in for Amy J. this morning is Kristen McQuarrie, she of the Tribune editorial board. And Kristen, your quick take, your hot take, as the kids say, if the year was 1987, on the summit meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump this week. The criticism of Trump was interesting as it came from some neocons of the conservative, well, neocons by definition, conservatives that are more interventionist, as well as the left, because they're the left. Was this progress, was this a well-thought-out gambit by Trump to at least make this effort?
Well-thought-out, I'm not sure. I'm holding off on whether or not it's actually a success. But I'll tell you what I'm not bothered by. I'm not really bothered by his flattery. I suppose I'm supposed to be, of Kim Jong-un. If that's what it takes to kind of stroke an ego in order to denuclearize and get us to this point, I don't really find that terribly offensive. But I'm hearing a lot of pushback on him for that.
Right. I don't know that Trump has forgotten who Kim Jong-un is, even though he's buttering him up for the purposes of this framework to denuclearization that they established. Here's Trump with Brett Baer on Air Force One earlier this week.
This should have been done 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. This shouldn't be done now where they have an arsenal of nuclear weapons. This should have never allowed to get to this point. With that being said, Chairman Kim wants to resolve the problem because he knew that we weren't playing around. I wasn't playing around. He's not playing around. We have a very
I really say for, you know, for a fairly short-term relationship, because it was unbelievably hostile, the rhetoric. Rhetorically, it was unbelievably hostile. And I think we have a very good relationship. We understand each other.
I mean, for all of the compliments that occurred the day of the summit and in some exit interviews, as it were, let's not forget this is also the same guy who was ridiculing him, calling him Rocket Man.
Right.
For most of his time as president of the United States. So it's a tactic. I don't know that it's a change of heart or a change of understanding about Kim Jong-un. But for more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Jed Babin, former United States Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, contributor to The Washington Times and The American Spectator. Jed, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Well, Greg, glad to be here. And one of these days we need to talk about the fact that neocons aren't conservatives, but that's for another day.
Yeah, okay. I'm just saying, you know, neoconservative. Yeah, but I hear you.
Okay.
All right, I hear you. What was your take in terms of the criticisms of Trump as being of conceding too much, like ending the quote-unquote war games, of being too complimentary? Was this a productive first meet? Is a framework for denuclearization a real possibility?
Well, I think that it was really too much to expect that anybody, whether it's President Trump or anybody else, could have done a lot more with Kim Jong-un in this first meeting. Mm-hmm. I think he did very well. I think he did give up a couple of things that he might not have gotten anything for, such as suspending the military exercises with South Korea. But we have to remember that it's not quite a toggle switch. I mean, you can't just turn those things on and off. But a military exercise can be rescheduled real easy. So suspending them is no big deal, and we can unsuspend them almost immediately.
Well, that's
so I think
yeah.
he did well. I wish he hadn't praised Kim as much as he did. I mean, Trump has said, well, you know, I can trust Kim. He really has changed. Well, no. So let's just see how it plays out. There are going to be several more meetings, I'm sure, and I am very skeptical about anything coming out of it, whether the North Koreans are going to denuclearize at all, I doubt. But we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Well, right. And so while Trump was being complimentary in some of these interviews with Stephanopoulos, with Bret Baier, at the same time, so concurrently, you had Mike Pompeo making clear that no sanctions are being relaxed. And the only way we're going to deal, you know, at a substantive level is after we have verified that denuclearization is in process or complete. So the kind of the criticism of Trump so far giving away the store or ceding leverage to Kim Jong-un, I don't really see.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think, you know, when you have real grown-ups like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo sitting at the president's corner and saying, yeah, boss, maybe we could do this, but not that, I really don't have a lot of worry about any bad deal coming out.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. What was your take on, just switching gears a bit, on the IG report, FBI, and what were the biggest bombshells that you think were revealed?
Well, you know, I tried to stay awake reading this thing, and I haven't gotten through all 600 pages. But it doesn't strike me as something that is at all unusual and is, quite frankly, interesting only insofar as the findings of bias. You know, you have the issue of, well, we didn't find anybody saying in writing that we're going to go out and help Hillary or screw Trump. Well, but that does not relieve the FBI of the obvious bias that went on throughout the election and, quite frankly, still appears to be going on today. So the question is, how do you clean up the FBI? And that's a very, very big task. It's going to require firing a bunch of people. It's going to require not just training. I mean, they're out there saying, well, we're going to train everybody now on not being politically biased. Well, that's fine, but you have to do a lot more than that. You have to have leadership in place that is going to ensure that there is no political bias in anything the FBI does, and I don't think they can do that with their current leadership. I really sincerely don't.
Did you find that the report revealed something that was particularly different from your experience when you served in government, or has this kind of been a culture in FBI no matter which political party is in charge?
Well, I don't know. I was never in the Justice Department of the FBI. You know, I sat across the river in the big five-sided puzzle palace. But the thing is, it struck me that having a culture in the FBI where people were routinely talking to the media when they shouldn't have been, accepting gratuities from the media, like golf outings and free lunches and stuff like that. That is a severe cultural crisis within the FBI that has to be, again, dug into at a very basic level. And I think that's the big shocker for me, is that they were just blithely leaking to the media. And we've seen it, and we still see it. And there's still, I believe, there's still a great deal of political bias going on in the FBI, not just with respect to Trump, but with respect to actually revealing what they are going, what they have done in respect to congressional requests for all sorts of oversight documents and testimony. The fact that they're trying to hide something right now and going to extraordinary lengths to hide it is a very telling fact about the whole Justice Department. It goes all the way up to Rod Rosenstein, at least.
And so what about that? So what about the senior leadership of CIA, Brennan, of Justice, of the FBI at the end of the Obama administration, and obviously Hillary Clinton, too, as the Secretary of State turned a presidential nominee? What is sort of all of this that continues to drip, drip, drip out and now in bigger drips with these huge reports? What does it say about what we should understand about the Obama administration and the rule of law?
Well, the Obama administration and the rule of law, as proven by these various investigations and as proven by the various revelations that continue to come out and will probably come out for the next 20 years, they are the most lawless and most corrupt, intellectually corrupt and politically corrupt administration we have seen since I don't know when. You know, you have a situation where the intelligence branches were so corrupted by Obama, and you may not even remember this. Pardon me, but there was a report that came out about a year and a half ago that, actually more than 2 years ago now, CENTCOM, Central Command, the analysts, the intelligence analysts at Central Command were forced to change their conclusions because they did not match the President Obama's political conclusions. They didn't support his political plans.
Right.
And a general, a four-star general who was the commander of CENTCOM was removed over that.
Mm-hmm.
Lloyd Austin was fired, and he should have been. So that's the kind of thing you see not only in the military intelligence, you saw in the civilian intelligence agencies. The Obama administration was a totally politicized organization in places where politics shouldn't go, like the CIA, like the Justice Department, like all of the other branches.
Well, and just
this is the kind of thing that you cannot easily route out, and I'll bet you there are about 75% of the people who were responsible for that politicization are still there.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things the IG report pointed out was it sort of caught Obama in a lie about what he knew and when he knew it with Hillary Clinton's private emails. You talk about in your most recent column, Team Obama lying to Congress on money going to Iran for the 2015 nuclear weapons deal. Tell us a little bit about your latest piece.
Well, thank you. I wrote for the American Spectator last Monday that the fact that the Obama administration had the Treasury Secretary and an Assistant Secretary of the Treasury up there in Congress testifying that the Iran deal would not allow any use of the American banking system by Iran, and at the same time, they were trying to grant licenses to American banks through this Office of Financial, pardon me, I don't remember the acronym stands for, Office of Financial Access Control, whatever it is, OFAC, was attempting to grant licenses to an Omani bank, to wash money for the Iranians through the American banking system. And the only reason it did not succeed, the only reason the scheme by the Obama administration didn't succeed, was the American bank said, hey, we're not doing this because we'll be liable under the sanctions law if we do.
Mm-hmm.
So the Obama administration was lying to Congress, trying to help the Iranians, and this is not the only way they tried to help the Iranians before the deal. Don't forget, they stopped a Justice Department investigation. You want to talk about Justice Department politicization and corruption. They stopped a Justice Department investigation of Hezbollah, the Lebanese Shiite terrorist proxy organization that runs for Iran, that Iran runs, really. They stopped an investigation of their drug trafficking, which impacted the United States, probably still does. The Obama administration didn't want anything to go against their idea of the Iran deal. And in doing so, they corrupted the Justice Department. They corrupted the Treasury Department. And again, we know so much about this. I can't imagine what else is going to come out now, because there's a lot more. I'm guaranteeing you there's a lot more history of corruption from the Obama administration, in the Obama administration, that we don't even know about yet.
That scandal-free administration, yes. Jed Babin,
yeah, right.
Former U.S. Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, contributor to the Washington Times and the American Spectator. Jed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And you joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Kristen McQuarrie. She of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, and that 568-page Inspector General, DOJ Inspector General report issued yesterday, and the top lines: insubordination, indifference, improper gifts, intimidated by Hillary's lawyers. Not exactly a banner day for the FBI or for the Department of Justice, for that matter. And President Trump seizing on it through Twitter and this morning on Fox and Friends, suggesting that he has been completely exonerated. What he has been saying about Jim Comey for months and months has been, he's been vindicated over those statements that he has made. And Christopher Wray, even while the D.C. press corps tries to spin this report as conceding no evidence of bias, of course, that's not what the report says. And there are examples in quotation marks, things people actually said, as well as evidence of things people did that demonstrate manifest bias. And oh, by the way, the current director of the FBI, Christopher Wray, is now ordering political bias training for FBI staff, Starbucks style, I presume. Christopher Wray yesterday in response to the report.
We need to hold ourselves accountable for the choices we make and the work we do. We're doing that fairly but without delay in the way that people should expect. We're going to adhere to the appropriate disciplinary process. And once that process is complete, we won't hesitate to hold people accountable for their actions.
Okay. That's sort of like a framework for denuclearization. Has a lot of words strung together that sound good. The details have yet to be filled in, it seems. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend, retired FBI special agent and famed criminal profiler from the Unabomber case, James Fitzgerald, who is also the author of a series of books, A Journey to the Center of the Mind. And he's played Worthington, Sam Worthington, in the Unabomber series on Netflix, which is really good. Paul Bettany plays Kaczynski, but it's a really good series.
I read the book. Have not.
Oh, you have
not familiar with the series.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, of course.
Of course.
You're a reader.
I'm an intellect.
Of course. You read. You don't see
exactly.
Movies. That's for the hoi polloi. James Fitzgerald, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Kristen.
So your reaction to the Inspector General's report and what it says about your former employer?
Yeah, I mean, where to begin here? I mean, it's not even, the ink, as they used to say, is not even dry on this report yet. And I thought reading the manifesto back in the day, the Unabomber's manifesto was dense and intense. At least he numbered his individual paragraphs. This makes it even more confusing and about three times the size. And full disclosure, I'm actually working in a legal case. I do my day job with my company. I do some forensic linguistic work. So I didn't really get a chance to deep dive into the report. But I have been following some media coverage of it. And it's eye-opening. It's depressing. It's exhilarating all at the same time. And I mean exhilarating sort of in a negative sense, in that it just reinforces to me Dan, I was on your show back in early February, and I remember saying, a cancer has metastasized at the very top of the FBI, and we have some agents now clearly named, others are agent 1, 2, you know, 3, 4, 5. There's some attorneys mixed in there too. We know DOJ played a role in this. DOJ, Department of Justice, and it was just truly. It's almost, you know, Reagan coined axis of evil with Russia, North Korea, and Iran. We're actually friendly with at least two of those countries now. I think we have like an axis of criminality here with the IRS, DOJ, and of course FBI is under there. And the whole nexus of this, and I think I've said this to you before, it has to do with Hillary Clinton. She is the end all and be all of everything here. There's circles that work outwards, you know, from the interior to the exterior, and everything touches on her and what she did, what she tried to do, what her people did, and of course Obama's in there too. The FBI and DOJ was just a mess in 2016. People were promoted to positions probably for the sole purpose of trying to alter the course of a campaign and an election, and it's just so sad to see this and to read about this. But I do have there's a glimmer of hope here. I didn't agree. I think Ray could have come upon, or he could have stated some more forcefully, used his words to describe, you know, what happened in the immediate past. But I think on the whole, he's doing a good job. And like I've said all along, I believe the FBI as an institution is fine. It's legit. 99.9%, I always use the same number, are great people. And thank goodness we have that 0.1% finally out. Perhaps even facing prosecution at some point.
So you were an agent for many years. You retired in 2007 from the FBI. What is the expectation day to day? Is there a case to be made that in some of these instances, these are colleagues who are in relationships in some cases, just texting each other, having like a harmless conversation? I'm just pushing back a little bit on this narrative, but is that not a regular work environment that should be tolerated at the FBI? And what was it like when you were there over the course of various, and I'm sure, very heated presidential campaigns?
Kristen, nothing like I now know about from the year 2016. And, of course, I was already removed by eight years or so. And, of course, text messaging was not quite as big back then. But we certainly had emails. You know, we could certainly have to be careful on an elevator riding up and down. When I was in New York, 26 Federal Plaza, because all different kinds of people were on it. And I almost feel embarrassed that these agents were not bright enough to realize they're using bureau phones, government phones. And as anybody knows who works for any company, your messages, be it, you know, spoken, written, at least you know, who you're calling and who's calling you, the company owns that. And do they really think no one would ever see this? But, Kristen, it really comes back to the fact, and I know, Dan, and you have discussed this before, and everybody else has, everybody assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. So none of this would have been an issue. It all would have been swept under the carpet if even identified at all. And that's where this whole issue just comes about, and it just manifests itself throughout. Like a sickness, like a virus, through the seventh floor of the FBI and this squad they put together to work these two cases, and one just shifted from the Hillary investigation to the alleged Russian investigation involving Trump, and of course Spygate, we know about that. I would have never seen anything like this. I worked a little bit for Mueller right after 9/11. I was never asked, or nor did I expect to be, play any sort of a role like some of these things I've seen under Comey. I knew Comey back in my New York days. He was a young assistant U.S. attorney. I was a young agent working bank robberies and the like. But I think agents, at least the agents I would associate with, knew a little bit better than to put things out publicly like this and on emails, on text messages. You just didn't do that, first of all, because you knew it could come back and kick you in the butt in terms of any sort of investigation down the line. But second of all, you just didn't want to taint an investigation. And third of all, you just didn't want to think like that. You should have horse blinders on and not be susceptible to political whims of your own or other people around you. And that's what we had on the seventh floor of FBI headquarters through most of 15 and 16, and of course into some of 17. And that's what now all the everyone's paying the price for this, including this country as a whole, seeing our great institution of the FBI brought down like this.
So do you place most of the blame for the cultural problem at FBI during 2016 on Jim Comey? And that culture will change under Ray because you've got now a new leadership, and so there'll be this new culture. Because, I mean, Comey, this op-ed in the New York Times that he wrote in response to the IG report is really breathtaking. And I've been watching it for the last 2 years, so I thought I would be a nerd to him by now, but I'm still not. He essentially suggests that, you know what, Dan? This report says I'm wrong, but that's great, because what we have here is an honest disagreement among a bunch of people trying to get it right earnestly. Hearts are all in the right place. Heads are all in the right place. We just have some honest disagreements. That's essentially what he's saying in this op-ed, and that's not what the IG report says.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of like a participation trophy for people nowadays. Hey, I participated in this, and sure, I didn't win the championship, or we actually finished in last place, but I'll take this as something that is better for everybody, including me. And it shocks the conscience that he actually could look at that. And he wrote the, exoneration letter or memo, several months before Hillary Clinton was in fact exonerated by him in July of 2016. And now, when did he write this op-ed piece for the New York Times with the report only coming out yesterday?
Exactly.
Him.
Yeah. He has a history.
And believe me, anybody who does professional writing, you want to make sure you get it right, dot your I's, T's, literally. And he has his whole thing out that made it into yesterday morning's paper, which of course means it had to be in a day or two before. So I have some questions about that issue too, but that's pretty far down the list in terms of his boldness and his pretentiousness, quite frankly, that he is sort of above all this. And yeah, a reasonable person could have seen this in both ways. I understand that. And we're all better for it now. No, Mr. Comey, that's not what your job was back in that day, back in running the FBI for the several years that you did. You had to be above the law. You had to be better than what you practiced and what you manifested through your own agency. And don't apologize now, and don't claim like nothing ever happened. And I just heard Trump say literally 20 minutes ago that he feels there are some criminal aspects to what James Comey did, not to mention Peter Strzok. And we'll see what his DOJ winds up doing with that.
Not to mention Andy McCabe. He is James Fitzgerald, retired FBI special agent, famed criminal profiler from the Unabomber case, the series of books, A Journey to the Center of the Mind, and then you catch the Unabomber Manhunt Unabomber series on Netflix, that is, which is excellent, as I've said before. James Fitzgerald, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Dan and Kristen. Have a great weekend.
You too. And he joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Kristen McQuarrie in for Amy J this morning. And, we're not going to have him for very much longer. El Gallito is soon to venture off to Puerto Rico to become a real estate magnate on the taxpayer dime, that bailout money.
Oh, you've been really working on the trolling of your R's.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
So Gutierrez is going to get his final licks in. And, in case you're a little perturbed with Jeff Sessions recusing himself from the Russian collusion investigation and some other matters, here's a way for you to rally to Jeff Sessions' defense once again. Here's Luis Gutierrez at a We the People Socialist Summit this week talking about Jeff Sessions.
Sessions, he just loved, for black people to be in the back of the bus again. Yeah, he loved for women to be in the kitchen. He loved for gay people to be in the closet again. And for me, not to have a microphone to be able to speak to anybody. We're not going to allow that to happen.
No, I like when you talk, El Gallito. I think it's clarifying. He was asked, subsequent to that performance, if you really wanted to stand by those words that the Attorney General of the United States, you think Jeff Sessions is a racist who wants black people to the back of the bus and women in the kitchen and so on and so forth. And Gutierrez, in classic Chicago Democrat form, doubled down.
I mean, this is a man that when he came before the Senate to try to become a federal judge, Coretta Scott King came forward, right? I mean, there were all kinds of testimonies about him calling black men boys. This is a man who is trying to strip black people as a U.S. senator from their voting rights and diminish their voting rights. I mean, this is a man that works for Donald Trump. And
there's the real thing, bro. There it is.
Charlottesville. We know where he's at. And when it comes to the Violence Against Women's Act, he voted against it. Wouldn't you ever see him stand up for women? He's never stood up for women, and he's never stood up. This is a man that protects Donald Trump when Donald Trump says that transgender people in the military should be banished.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just take your calls. Fond memories of El Gallito, your favorite highlight from his illustrious two-decade career as a member of Congress representing the Chicago, part of the Chicagoland area, of course.
Mm-hmm. What was his role back when Clinton was, when there was impeachment hearings against Clinton? I love hearing all of these longtime Democrats talk about the women's movement and Trump and like Senator Durbin, for example, voted not to impeach, not to convict when it came to the Senate. So, you know, they have a record, too.
Oh, they have a record. I mean, it's just recently that Gutierrez's property was put back on the property tax rolls. Oh, do they have a record?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, Kristen McQuarrie, Chicago Tribune Ed Board. And let's turn stateside a bit here. Last time you were on, we talked a little bit about Madigan's future. Mike Madigan, House Speaker, longest-serving State House Speaker in the history of Western civilization. since that time, we saw him lose yet another Inner Sanctum member, his longtime Chief of Staff, Tim Mapes. Mm-hmm. To allegations of inappropriate conduct related to women in Springfield. And then this week we had this rather interesting development. Kevin Quinn, who's one of his field goons, who was dismissed a few weeks back for essentially, arguably, the accusation was, sort of stalking, harassing another campaign operative named Elena Hampton, who came forward. And this becomes like the fifth member of Madigan's inner circle that is in trouble, or the resigned, kicked out, the subject of serious allegations. He released a statement this week that essentially takes each claim that his accuser, this is Kevin Quinn, Elena Hampton's his accuser, each claim that she made, both politically and as it relates to him personally, and refutes it, or at least provides additional context to it. I don't know what the truth is. I do know that Kevin Quinn has a order of protection against him from an ex-wife.
An ex-wife who 6 months before he was fired by Madigan also says she sent Madigan a detailed letter about the domestic abuse that she was suffering and was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
So a known domestic abuser, alleged. But she says she sent a letter detailing these allegations against her husband months before he was terminated. And remember, this is important. This is somebody who's part of his on-the-ground operation. He only was fired when it became clear that the Tribune was about to publish a story about Elena's accusations against him. So it was only when...
Elena Hampton also... said she sent a letter to Mike Madigan detailing the problems that she was having.
Months before.
Right.
She says she was harassed by him for like five months. And Madigan only let him go, fired him, dealt with it, you know, hours before the Tribune was about to publish this report. But that's just in the past few days. Kevin Quinn caught up with reporters at a hearing of Hampton's case, handed out this 14-page letter where he basically says he was inappropriate, but it did not rise to the level of a firing offense. And he kind of blamed the media. It's no secret that the media has strong, unconscious personal biases against Speaker Madigan. He wrote, negative news sells. And so enlarged the news coverage over the last 15 years surrounding Speaker Madigan has attempted to paint him in a negative light. So he sort of blames everything, not on his own texts, which we've seen, where he's pursuing this much younger campaign worker and asking her out on dates, telling her she looks hot. That's excusable, apparently.
Although he says, you know, she wasn't a subordinate of mine. I wasn't making hiring or placement decisions. But the interesting thing to me is not so much that back and forth, although if the things that Elena Hampton says happened in addition to the text messages happened, then it's a problem. There's no question. It's interesting because there's a couple of things happening here. One is there's no lag time anymore. You know, there was lag time for Shaw DeCremer, a lobbyist campaign operative of Madigan, and for Kevin Quinn. Then you move to, you know, past Lou Lang, his deputy majority leader, and to Mapes. And Mapes, the accusation comes one mid-morning, and Tim Mapes, his two-decade-long implementation guy, chief of staff, is gone 2 hours later.
Right.
That's a quick turnaround. That's like full self-survival mode as far as I'm concerned. That's what it appears to be. And the Kevin Quinn statement, the 14-page letter you referenced, this is something that wasn't approved. This is something that didn't emanate from Madigan's office, didn't get the high sign from Madigan. So now you've got a field goon like Kevin Quinn deciding comm strategy for himself, which he obviously knows will reflect back on Madigan, but doesn't feel the need or Madigan's lost control of people in terms of who's saying what to whom when, mm-hmm. which is very un-Madigan-like. And my question to you then is, with, you know, how you see this progressing, in addition to some rumblings with his own caucus, and admittedly, they are just more like whimpering in his own caucus, not even rising to the level of rumblings yet. You know, do we have some the possibility, with a lot of rumors that there is much more yet to come with respect to Lou Lang and just in general, do we have the possibility that this could be Madigan's undoing and it could come before the November election?
I don't think so. And we've talked about this before. I think there is a separation between the Tim Mapes type behavior, which I don't know was necessarily sexual in nature as it was just harassment. And he was kind of a tyrant. He ran a very tight ship. He obviously said horrible things to Sherry Garrett, the woman who came forward with allegations against him. But there is still a loyalty to Madigan. Madigan is not someone who's dumb enough to approve of any of this behavior, to say anything himself. They owe him. He owes them. So I don't see this as being part of his necessary downfall. He is also appeasing them by creating this new panel where they're going to choose the new executive
sure.
director of the Democratic Party executive director.
Oh,
so I just feel like this will wash over in some regard, and they will feel like they can at least go back and say, we demanded that we got to pick a new woman to oversee the party function.
What if he also just incorporates in toto the new Netflix anti-harassment policy? Do you think that would satisfy the kind of the pea hat wearers, the men and women in his caucus, mostly from Chicago? If you know, in regular dealings with members of the House, including on the floor, you could not stare at someone for longer than 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm. That is part of the new Netflix anti-sexual.
You got 5 seconds. Okay. Anything more is creepy.
You got to look away. Okay.
And creepy is a legal technical term.
Yes, it is.
No lingering hugs or touches. Okay. Boy, that's going to really put a crimp in Lou Lang's time in Springfield. Don't ask a colleague out more than once if they've said no. Steer clear of a colleague once they've said they're not interested in you. I don't know why this requires a policy for adults, but apparently this is a problem. Don't flirt. And then if somebody, could you imagine this on the House or Senate floor in the chambers? If someone is doing something that's inappropriate, not following these rules, you shout, stop, don't do that again, Lou Lang.
I mean, actually, I think this is the perfect environment for these rules, because there isn't a more first, second, third grade ridiculous, immature environment of men and women probably than in Springfield. So, yes, maybe they need to be told that you have to shout If someone is saying something you don't like, don't look at each other longer than 5 seconds.
Stranger danger, stranger danger.
Yes. No more passing notes around, like, who's the hottest lawmaker? Rank 1 to 10.
Oh my,
do you like
that
so-and-so?
Actually happened.
Circle, yes or no.
Yeah.
Yes, it's,
no,
it's
no
a
more,
very elementary school
yeah.
environment.
So no, actually, no more scrolling on your Trapper Keeper. I heart
right.
the assistant majority leader.
Exactly. I think that's a brilliant idea.
The interesting thing, though, just talking about the political dynamics of this and why one organization, crime family, some might say, is more successful than the other. You were talking about the loyalty to Madigan and that he can survive this. Do you think any Republican would survive anything like this?
No, of course not.
And the interesting thing is Rahner, right? He appoints a former state representative, Ken Duncan, to the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. You know, good, not a bad gig.
No, not a bad gig at all.
Mm-hmm. What's the percentage of employees at MWRD north of 100 grand? Like all of them?
Pretty close. The commissioners get paid 80, and I think they have to show up to like one meeting a month, and they qualify for a pension.
So when Rahner, because Ken Duncan was named along with Tim Mapes as somebody who said and behaved inappropriately towards Sherry Garrett and others.
Mm-hmm, correct.
Mm-hmm. He's appointed to, he's a Democrat, was Democrat state rep. He's appointed MWRD board by Rahner as payback for this one vote that he took against Madigan a couple of years ago with respect to collective bargaining negotiation power. And Rahner, of course, in the wake of this being, you know, just like wherever.
Panicking. Oh, God. What do I do?
Wherever the zeitgeist is, that's where I want to be. Oh, my God. he calls for Ken Duncan to step down MWRD. And what does Ken Duncan say? Tim Mapes. I've asked for Tim Mapes' resignation. He, you know, it was on my desk before I finished my sentence with respect to Madigan. Ken Duncan. I've asked for Ken Duncan to step down. I know I'm not in charge. I'm only the governor, but I have asked for Ken Duncan to step down. Ken Duncan's response, I don't think so.
No, get lost. Get lost, basically.
I'm good.
He also just doesn't have any statutory authority to ask him to step down.
Yeah, but there's statutory authority and then there's political weight.
Yeah, but the
right?
Yes, but also the issue is he appointed him to this spot. Ken Duncan is a little bit of a risky appointment
given
his history. And then days after he appoints him, he picks up the phone and is like, hey, you know, given this latest allegation against you, could you please step down?
Nope.
Yeah.
You do me a solid? No.
No.
Not going to happen.
No. He was sworn in like hours later at an MWRD meeting.
I got to go. I got to get to this board meeting at MWRD, you know, the thing you appointed me to. By the way, the rumors about Ken Duncan, everybody knew. Everybody's heard that stuff about Ken Duncan before, too.
Oh, yes.
So this is a surprise to no one.
Right.
Including the governor who's not in charge. I mean, it's just a remarkable contrast. It's been this way in the Republican Party for a long time. Predates Rahner. He's just another example of the pathetic leadership of the Republican Party for a long time. How weak it is. How weak and just cowardly it is. It's every moment for the Republican Party here is the Jeb Bush please clap moment. Please clap. Please like me. Please help me. Please, someone, won't you help me? And Madigan, even in the face of this incursion into his inner sanctum with something that is a national movement, I agree with you. He's a long way from any sort of existential threat.
I think so.
Although you never know where it's going to go, but
right.
He's a long way from there.
I think you would have to have a direct connection to him knowing and sweeping things under the rug. And we don't have that, and I think he's smarter than that. So I
still think he could buy his way out of it with respect to his caucus because you just have too many people that are reliant on him for campaign cash in addition to reliant on him for their phony baloney jobs and government
and their
throughout the state.
And their children in some cases and their siblings.
Yes, right. Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning, Kristen.
Hey, Dan, I know you're always resurrecting one of your cover bands.
Yes.
Maybe you could resurrect your Tears for Fears cover band.
Everybody wants to rule the world.
No, I was thinking about redoing the lyrics for Shout Shout. So, yeah. It could be the political slogan song. You know, Shout Shout, pull
Let
your hands out. These are my clothes I'm talking about. Get out. There's no room there for you. Get out. And, you know, go on with the second lyric. But, yeah,
that's
apparently these politicians haven't figured out that the best place for their hands is not inside other people's clothing.
Yes, thanks for the call, Ralph. Used to be, hands in my pockets just meant financially. It's been taken to a whole new level. But I like some of the prose that Ralph...
I would have liked to hear him actually hum it, sing it. You know, he half-assed.
He's a back office guy. He's a writer. We have Justin to do the singing.
Shout, shout, let it all out. No, you know, we want to hear the...
Between Ralph and Rantoul and Justin, I think we have a Weird Al Yankovic kind of duo coming together. So we're going to have to work on that shout, shout song for the Netflix policy. I like that.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer. On AM 560, The Answer.
I think we should start a countdown on Chris Ray.
Oh, you think Chris Ray's in trouble?
I think he's in trouble. Yeah, yeah. I think he's in trouble. So, Trump this morning on Fox and Friends was talking about how he's tried to stay out of DOJ, but now he might have to get back involved. And Ray's basically just saying this report focuses on a specific set of events and doesn't impugn the integrity of our workforce at FBI.
Hmm. I think it would behoove Trump to engage Ray, to engage Sessions and Rosenstein, and to signal to the American public that he's taking an active interest in working with the leadership of both agencies to restore the credibility that's been damaged by the previous leadership of both agencies. I think that's a good market position for Trump, substantively, and to tamp down on some of the antagonism and to be seen as a constructive influence draining the swamp.
I think he's gone by Wednesday.
Really? Wow, that's a bold prediction. I have this question, too, because we're talking about Netflix, just some odds and ends here. We're talking about Netflix new anti-harassment policy. So I want to get your take, female perspective on this. This is from Bill and Berwyn. If the new Netflix policy is no more than 5 seconds of eye contact, can I limit my eye contact to 5 seconds and then return to staring at a woman's chest?
No, I think you only get the 5 seconds, so you better start at the
five
chest.
5 seconds total.
Total.
All right.
So direct that gaze exactly where you're going to get the most bang for your buck.
That's helpful, and that's why we have you sub
Thank
for Amy
you.
J, so we get that those kind of insights.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.